The sales tie and the corporate grind for muddy boots and that Texas sunshine. Dorothy by his side on a 3-acre spread, 9-mile farmstead where the good life gets fed. 18 years of pockets dropping truth every day, helping you live better, tough times or not. That's what he'd say. Calls himself a redneck hippie duck farmer, y'all, with a jerk of a smile. Standing tall, redneck hippie duck farmer, down on 9 Mile Way, biochar in the garden like a bomb shelter for the clay. Ducks on the pond, pastured eggs in the pan, food forest growing while he lends a helping hand. Ditch the system, design your life, that's the law he wrote. Stacking silver, stacking sats, shotgun by
All right, just a little fun there, guys. Hope you enjoyed that. I know I did. I had a pretty shitty week last week. I don't think you guys really were aware of it or anything, and nothing super terrible happened. It was just one of those things with, like, cascading failures. Like, everything that could go wrong went wrong, down to, like, stupid little shit. Like, we ordered a new coffee pot. What could go wrong with that? Right, so we take the coffee. Well, first the old coffee pot shit the bed and pissed water all over the floor like a 1/2 gallon of water. It just poured out of it. I had to clean that up at 5 o'clock in the morning. And then we ordered the new coffee pot and I set it to run clean, you know, like no coffee, just run through. I'm outside, I hear Dorothy yelling for me. The coffee pot's screaming. What do you mean? It was making a horrible ghost-like sound and new printer wouldn't work and a bunch of other shit. And I'm not really complaining. I'm just kind of pointing something out. I had a crappy week. And then this weekend, somebody, a guy named Jason, I don't know if he wants his last name put out. So I just put Jason P in the thing. He sent that and it made my day. You know, it's not going to be making the top 40 charts or nothing like that, but it was fun and it made my day. And maybe we'll go out and play the whole thing today on the way out. It may become, at least on some shows, the new intro music. It's kind of cool. It's very detailed. And the guy that made it said he made it with 2 apps in 2 minutes, which was pretty damn impressive to me. Anyway, if you have any questions today, follow the example right here. Put the word question in all caps and then your question after it. I'll get to that at the end after we cover everything. We've got a lot of stuff covered today. Well, number one, we are celebrating, and I think that's why Jason made that video for us, and it even has lines in it like about us going to Estes Park, writing Laws of Life, Charlie and Max on Patrol, which is kind of cool because both of those guys have passed on now, and that's kind of a fitting thing because they were the patrol team on 9 Mile Farm for a long time. But, yeah, we turned 18 years old. And I think that's why Jason sent me that. It was kind of a great little anniversary gift. And the reason we didn't have a show on the anniversary day is that we actually turned our 18th birthday over the weekend. So we are back now and celebrating 18 years of TSP. I'll talk about the homeschool convention I'll be doing the keynote at the end of August. I'll talk about book 2 dropping at the end of this month, which is just Tuesday next week now, the week out. We're going to talk about something to do with the audiobook. If you got the audiobook of Laws of Life 1 second edition, I have some information for you that you might want to know. I was not happy. I don't like virtual voice, but it is what I can do for audiobooks only, or the only thing I can do for audiobooks, I should say. And I didn't like the way the one that I picked turned out, and you can update to the newest one if you already have the book, but you need to know how to do it. Then we're going to talk about AI data centers again, but not from a standpoint of people that are freaking out about them or anything like that. So we're going to talk about like this whole, they're going to use all electricity. They're going to use a lot of energy. They're going to probably, in many instances, make more than they use and sell it back to the grid, though. Huge partnership just announced between Microsoft for an AI data center and Exxon in Texas. Yeah, natural gas generated power plant for the AI center, which will be way more than they could ever possibly use, no matter how much data they crunch there. We're also going to talk about the boom glut bust cycle that will come to AI just like everything else. Online shopping had a boom glut bust cycle, and Amazon pretty much is the king of the hill. And lots of other little tiny players are here and there, but not important. And then there's some other, you know, Walmarts and stuff like that. But in the online shopping space, there's one king. If you look at search, Google dominated search for 20 plus years. Yahoo is kind of that second tier. And then, you know, there's Lycos, AltaVista, Hotbot, if you remember those. There's going to be a lot of that in the AI space. We'll talk about that. But while there'll probably be more winners than there was in, let's say, search or online shopping, but it's still going to be a small number compared to the what's going on right now. Let's talk about the Iran deal, a little politics today at least. And we're going to talk about how it's not right back where we started. It's not a defense of Trump. I wouldn't have done any of this. But if we're going to evaluate something, then we should evaluate the thing, not what people that don't know anything about anything who have mental illnesses are saying about the thing. So I'll tell you a little bit about how that's, at least at this point, looking like it will work. And the situation we're in versus the situation we were in. And you can, I wrote this morning and it's already changed. It's already back above the number. But when I originally put the show notes together, you could have bought SpaceX for under the retail price that people paid during the ICO or the IPO. And certainly you can still buy it for well under the price that most people paid for it in the late part of that day and in the following days of euphoria. And I'll even give you kind of where I think you should be looking to buy this if you want to add it to your portfolio. And no surprise, it's about 6 months out, just like John Pugliano and I said like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago when we talked about it. Tulsi spilled all the Anthony Fauci tea on the way out. I'm going to tell you why it won't matter and why it was never going to matter. And it's not really because Fauci has a blanket federal pardon, though that certainly doesn't help matters. Kirstammer is gone, but it's likely going to get worse in the UK because, well, no one has the spine to admit, let alone fix the problem. The new guy taking over is a democratic socialist, a business-friendly socialist, if ever such a thing could actually exist. He's left of Stammer, but he's going to fix it. And he's talking tough on immigration, baby. Yeah, we'll see. I'll tell you why I think the UK is totally screwed, and they do not have the spine to fix their own problem. It is going to take a literal insurrection-style revolution in the UK to fix this problem. And I don't think the UK people have it left in them. And there's a dangerous message in that for people like us. And then the world is learning something due to the World Cup being largely in America this time around. I'll save what that is until we get to it in just a minute. Before we do that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day, except I don't have the sponsors of the day up. So let me pull up the sponsors of the day. I have to figure out who the heck they are. Right now, I kind of blew this one, guys. Sorry, first day back after a long weekend. Sponsor today, number one today, is USABerkeyFilters.com. Jeff the Berkey Guy Gleason has been a sponsor of this show for a very, and I mean a very long time. Going all the way back to 2010 was when Jeff first sponsored this show. That's 16 years ago. 16 of 18 years he's been a sponsor of the show. Check him out at usaberkeyfilters.com where you can get Berkey filtration systems, the filters for them, and other really cool items for your prepping. Next up today, JM Bullion, you know, right in the song, stacking silver, stacking sats, right? I have never said, like some people, go all in on one thing. I've always been about diversity of your investment portfolio. And I've always recommended 5 to 10% of your net wealth in silver and or gold or other precious metals. I still do that today. I've been recommending that for 18 years on the air and longer than that. In reality, I don't think that'll change anytime soon. Once you've recommended something for a couple decades, you pretty well have made a decision that that is a way forward. My thing with JM Bullion would be, why should you buy from them? Why shouldn't you? better pricing. I know the president personally, okay? Discounts for MSB members on orders of over 300 and a bigger discount on orders of 1,000. All orders ship free, same silver as everywhere else. And that's why, and they support the show now. They've been supporting us since 2013, right? That's 13 years. So we do have some long-term sponsors around here. All right, so let's talk about some things. Number one, I just wanted to say again to Jason who made that song for me, thank you. That was fun listening to it. Like I said, maybe I'll play the whole thing on the way out just for the hell of it so you can hear all of the lines. There's some pretty cool stuff in it. If you're like, that kind of sounds like someone similar to someone I might know from country music, the archetype that Jason used when he made that song was Luke Bryant, who I think, yeah, that's probably right in that league, upbeat country song in the style of Luke Bryant would be pretty good. But there's some cool lines in it about, you know, the recent trip to Estes Park and some other stuff. So maybe I'll say that. I'll play that for you guys at the end. But, you know, I just want to say at this point to everybody out there listening to me today, for 18 years, y'all have let me live my dream. And I hope I've given more than enough back for that, but I don't know that I ever could. And I know I hear from a lot of you guys that say thank you all the time, and you appreciate the work that we do here, and we've made an impact in your life, and that's great. But I'm going to tell you, I don't know that it can ever be enough. Because what it's done for me has allowed me to invest these 18 years of my life doing something that I feel has meaning. And any man that gets to invest two decades roughly of his life doing something that he really believes in and has meaning and has tangible results. So all the things that you guys think you got from me, you actually gave to me. Every single email, every single big business win that I hear about. Some of you guys are out there running businesses larger than mine now. And some of you doing that are solopreneurs. And when I get an email from somebody that said we did 900,000 last year and it's March and we've more than doubled last year's revenue this year, that feels pretty damn good. And you might think, well, you helped that person do that. No, that is the meaning that comes out the backside of this. And it's everything from big businesses to small businesses to a kid picking a radish and everything in between. So thank you so much to all of you over the years. You've given me not only the freedom to do something that I think is valuable and meaningful, but you've given me the feedback to show me that it's true. And that, you know, just kind of feeds right into Laws of Life Book 2 dropping next Tuesday. When I went out and decided to finally do what you guys asked me to do for years, which is write some books, initially I didn't really want to. I'm like, I gave away everything I have in audio. They've got 3,858 episodes as of today, average an hour to 2 hours long each. I mean, there's thousands and thousands of hours of everything I know put out there. But I understood the difference of putting in a book. And I had several publishers, I mean, sizable publishers, one that I work with to get authors on, like, you know, Brad Thor and Miles Lagoze and Jim Shockey. Like, I've had these authors on the show. So obviously I have to have an in at some place, you know, it's a big time publishing house. And if you know those authors, you can figure out what publishing house that is. So I've had people talk to me about writing books with a publisher, and they all want me to write a book on survivalism. And it's just, you know, preparedness is one piece of what I do. If you get the new book, Laws of Life Book 2, there's a chapter in this book fully dedicated to preparedness. It's one of the longer chapters. I personally think it's very well done. But the important thing that I've tried to bring over these 18 years to you guys is living the better life if times get tough or even if they don't. Preparedness is a tool so that in that system of design, when things fail, not if, when things fail in your life or your area or your state or your sector of industry or globally like they did because of government incompetence during COVID or anything in between, you have the tools to stay on track, not just to survive, but to thrive through and come out the other side. And so this show has really been about lifestyle design since day one. It's what it's always been focused on. And these books were designed to try to make that more formulaic and to try to make that more presentable and try to make it something that you could hand to somebody else. And I'll say again, the first book was in some ways a failure. I mean, it did well. A lot of people loved the content itself, but it had technical errors. And it wasn't, it certainly wasn't my best work. It was also my first work as an author. Like, no matter how good you are at something, the first time you do something, you're not going to be great at it. And so I had to learn from that experience. And I also had to learn what I'm not good at. I had to learn, like, don't even try to format shit. Just hire somebody to do that. Don't try to do editing. Just hire somebody to do that. When you recover your book after somebody edited it for you, maybe you didn't recover the right one. Lots of lessons in that. And so when I wrote this book, which is going to be available again starting on Tuesday next week, I came at it at a different level, but it was the same format, right? It was the same. We're going to come up with the 16 laws. We're going to put them in order. But then as I wrote it, new things surfaced and new things came out. And I'll tell you alone, there's a chapter in here that goes deep into conflict resolution. And it's everything from conflict resolution of somebody trying to kill you in a parking lot to dealing with an overbearing parent. And that chapter is probably worth the price of the book by itself, to dealing with conflict in the workplace. And I don't mean workplace shooters or something like that. I mean the adversarial asshole who wants the promotion that you're trying to get, or the one that's taking a shot at you in a boardroom. And again, everything in between. And as I did that, I realized there were some things I could do to make it better. And one was to rely more on reflective quotes. So those got worked in every chapter. Another was to make sure the mental code rewrites were in every chapter in a sequence of three because of the balance of three and what that number brings to the table, along with chapter distillations and framework formulas. And those are all in this. This book is a much bigger book than book one. It's longer. It is deeper. And it is better in every way. And the new book, second edition, is damn good, but it's not as good as this because this went to another level. That's why it's called Now Build the System for Your Life. So the first thing we did was we ditched the system to design our life. And now, realizing that systems are stronger than willpower, now we're going to install a new system. So just like a computer upgrade, first we have to wipe out the old OS, and then we install the new one. So if you would help me like you did the first time, if Tuesday you guys could go out and buy a copy of this book, and if everybody out there that listens to me would buy a copy of this book, we would own everything on Amazon for a couple weeks. I don't expect that to happen. But if everybody that buys one would commit to buying at least two copies and sending one to somebody else, then we could still do really, really well. So if you would consider that. Or, you know, if you have a big family or something, there's no limit on how many you're allowed to buy and ship it with Amazon free shipping. You can ship it directly to the person, too. You don't even have to put your hands on it. But please help me get this book out. This would be, if you want to give me an anniversary present for 18 years, buy a copy and buy a copy for a friend. That would do it, even though it's a week after it happened. All right. So let's move on from there. Audiobook. I just, one more thing on the audiobook or on the books, and then from there we will we'll head into the rest of the topics today. As I said last week, the reason I do virtual voice for audio with KDP is, first of all, I don't think I have another option. If you're a KDP author, that's Amazon self-publishing platform, there isn't even a place to like upload your audiobook. I'd have to go directly to Audible, use an aggregator, and what have you. But the other side of it, I just don't make any money. I'm not complaining. I'm just telling you, I looked at if I go buy like cloning software, clone my voice and do that, that would cost me about a week to get it fully dialed into where it really sounds like me and has my cadence and all. And then it would cost me about $1,100 to do the first book. And it would cost me about $1,500 to $1,600 to do this book. And on average, I make about 40 cents when an audiobook gets sold. So the money's not there to be recovered. So it has to be virtual voice. So I went and I listened to like all the masculine American voices in virtual voice this time around, and I picked a different voice, and it sounded really good in the preview. And then when I got my own copy of the audiobook after it dropped, I didn't like it at all. I didn't like the way it sounded. I didn't like its cadence. I didn't like its inflections, and it said a lot of words wrong. Now, all of them say some words wrong. They might say, live instead of live or something like that. Hominins, they'll screw up. Sometimes they'll take a pluralization off of a word. But this one was really bad. It couldn't even say distilled right. It said it in the back end right, and it said it distillate or something like that. If you want the new voice that I picked, which is the old voice from the first book, it's much better. It's not perfect, but it's much better. The way to get it now would be to completely delete the audiobook from your device and re-download it, and then you'll get the update. There's no way for me to push out and overwrite the file you already have, but that can be done. All right, now let's get on to some more stuff. So let's talk about data centers. And again, I'm not going to get into this whole, AI is the devil today or any of this crap or trying to convince you that there's no real way around this. But it looks like I left something off my notes that I want to cover first. So let's cover this first and I will add it to the notes later. And that is that if you want to come hang out with me, you're going to get a chance to do that really soon if you live, anywhere near Charleston, West Virginia. I highly doubt somebody's going to travel from like L.A. or maybe even Philadelphia to Charleston just to have a meetup with me, but stranger things have happened. But there is a West Virginia Homeschoolers Convention. Many of you guys know who Colonel Roy Ramey is. He's a good friend of mine. We actually served at the same time in Panama together. We just didn't know each other back then. He was an enlisted soldier at the time. He was a private just like me at the time. And but he stayed in. When he got out of active duty, he went the National Guard route. He went the full-time National Guard route, pursued a commission, and he spent 23 years in the military and retired as a lieutenant colonel. And he is now deeply involved in West Virginia politics in a proactive way, like in the agricultural space and the homeschool space. He even ran for ag commissioner of West Virginia. And he is a member of the board for the West Virginia Homeschool Educators Organization, and they have a homeschool convention on the 29th of August. I will be speaking at that, and I will be talking to homeschool parents about how to use AI to better educate their children. And I'm going to be turning things up a bit here. I'm going to be teaching how to do a crit, and then I'm going to teach parents how to use that to empower their children to learn whatever they want to learn. We're not going to be talking about using AI to explain an algebra problem. That's surface level. What we're going to talk about is something that is, germane to my next book, Me, Myself, and AI, which is using AI to develop yourself. And what happens if you teach children to do that early on? And I know that's a divisive topic for some of you guys. But the reality is, as you'll find out with my next story, like this isn't going away. And this is going to be something we need to adapt to and learn how to use. And those of us who don't are going to be dominated by those who do. That's just reality. Those who wait for the green light will work for those who don't. And I don't want that for people. I want people to realize that there is power in this tool. There's good and bad. There's negative. I can say that about every piece of technology that's ever been developed. There's good and bad in email. There's good and bad in smartphones, and you all have them. There's good and bad in video content online. There's good and bad in TikTok-type videos. There's good and bad in long-form videos. There's good and bad in podcasts. There's good and bad in being wired and connected, and there's good and bad in being disconnected, right? So we have to deal with the reality. And somebody's telling me the value of the audiobook that I just talked about would be in funneling people into the podcast. Thank you for your marketing advice, but it's not going to funnel that much, okay? It just isn't, right? This is an ROI decision. If you want to fund it, and we'll come up with if we can put a metric on it to determine its ROI, and then after you fund it, you get paid back based on the return of investment, you're welcome to do so. But I don't see the ROI there, so I can't spend the money and the time on it. I have other books to write and other things to develop for you guys. Anyway, moving on. We're going to be doing that, and I really would like to have you guys come up there and hang out with me. I'm staying at a hotel. It's a Courtyard Marriott, and the hotel has a really great bar in it. It's right in downtown Charleston. It's about 10 minutes from the airport. It's on that side of the river, on the airport side of the river, and I'll probably just do a meetup there. I'm flying in on Friday, and I'm not getting there till the evening. I probably won't get to my hotel like 6 o'clock. It's gonna be a long day with connections and crap like that. There's no direct flights from Dallas to Charleston, West Virginia. When I get in, I'm probably gonna be done. I'm gonna prep for the next day, and I'll go do the presentation. I'm gonna be there all day at that event if you want to come. I'm sitting on a discussion panel as well as doing the keynote. And then I'll go back to my room and get cleaned up and all. And then that evening, as we get closer and I get full time lined out and all, I'll release more on the meetup. But there's several people who have already said they want to be there. So if nothing else, you get to hang out with me and some other cool TSP people. So if you are in the area at all, please consider coming to that. Even if you don't come to the homeschool convention, you're still welcome to come to the meetup. Now let's move on to data centers. So what if I told you, Neo, that this big fear we have of data centers using all the power is actually in reverse? What if I told you that many of these data centers are going to be making deals for power generation, and they're going to be producing power in excess of their consumption, and then they're going to turn around and they're going to sell that power back to the grid in surplus? That's impossible. I read one time from a guy that knows a guy whose former cousin's roommate used to work for Rupert Murdoch, who actually knows Kevin O'Leary, who once went to China and slept on a floor in India, and he said they're going to use all the power and the oceans are going to get drained and all the cows are going to die. So I know that's true. Yeah, but it's not. And no disrespect to anybody's cousin's uncle's former roommate, but usually that means, in the words of Dark Helmet, absolutely nothing. Microsoft and Chevron, I think I said Exxon in the build-up, but one oil company is another oil company. They're all the same, right? No, seriously, Microsoft, it does matter when you're buying stock. I'll just say that. Microsoft and Chevron have entered into an exclusivity deal on powering a West Texas AI data center complex. This particular agreement calls for the building of a 2.5 gigawatts, right, of gas-fired power in West Texas, enough to power nearly 2 million homes. Now, I know that the GPU spinning round and round and round that upset you, I know that those guys use a lot of power. It's not a surprise. Plenty of people know this. Like, no one's going to be shocked. Hey, it uses a lot of power. But it doesn't use 2 million homes worth of power. Anybody that tells you that, again, somebody's cousin's uncle's former roommate or whatever, no, don't, just relax. It's not the case. And if you look at that part of Texas, 2 million people, bro, There's not really 2 million people. You're talking about like Midland, Odessa, oil patch area. They're probably going to be using a lot of flared gas to do this, or they have some new gas wells that are going to produce in surplus of what they can sell without crashing the market or something like that. This is a massive amount of power. It's a massive amount of power. And you know what you have once you have cheap, locally available power? You have the heartbeat center of new cities and towns. And I think what you're going to see is a lot of these remote areas are going to attract people who go there for work. Now, these data centers don't necessarily employ huge amounts of people once they're fully operational and commissioned. They take a tremendous amount of human labor to build, but they take a lot less labor to maintain than to construct, like any building. You look how many people work on building a car dealership versus how many people work at a car dealership, for an example. And this would probably be even a thinner ratio to the body count of the builders. It's still a significant number of people in a place that doesn't have a significant number of people normally. And those people need a place to live. And when you have people that are paid well, and they will be, living in a place, then, and you have lots of power and availability of power to other people, generally you attract more people and towns coalesce and build around them. If you drive through middle America, you will constantly come across these towns. And I'm not talking about a new Dallas, right? I'm not talking about a new Austin or a new Atlanta or a new LA or a New York City. Like, don't think, or a new Chicago, right? Like, we don't need any more of those. What I'm talking about is, you know, you got a place where a big city has 15,000 people in it, and you could end up with a new town with 30 or 40,000 people in it over 5 to 10 years, or maybe 15 years. That's the kind of thing that's going to occur. That's the kind of nexus that's going to be built. And where you see it right now is a place that's actually dying and going the other direction, and that is small colleges. These small colleges are had been previously commissioned in like small town America. It's cheaper to build, et cetera. It's idyllic. The kids that go to school, mom and dad pay the bills, plus they get loans, and you go to this place with big oak trees, and you have a quad, and everybody gets around and goes to the drum circle and pretends to learn things. And as these colleges grew, the towns grew with them, right? Now, those colleges had some of these data centers won't, which is body count. And they have this rotating body count of new people coming in, people that need to rent and stuff like that. But I still think you're going to see quite a bit of suburban development in rural areas that will be linked to data centers. And I think in some cases, the reason these people are acquiring so much land for a data center isn't for the data center's footprint. The one O'Leary's building out in Utah is like twice the size of Manhattan, supposedly. Nobody's going to build a building that big. And if you believe that, you're a special kind of person that I can't help. Okay? There's a reason when people want these large blocks of land, and it ain't to just put up, you know, miles of solar panels either. Though some of these places, they may do a lot of it. They're not going to do that amount. It's not a good ROI. It very much seems like we have some form of the new company store, if you know Tennessee Ernie Ford in the history of the coal mines, though I don't think it will be quite as dystopian as that was, and we won't need a new Molly Maguire's, if you know what I'm talking about. If you don't, you can look it all up. But that's what's coming, right? But the other thing that's coming, and I think that this is something that people just don't understand, and, you know, if you read my, not this book, but if you read my first book, Laws of Life, Book 1, This is System Design Your Life, you know that one of my laws is everything is a cycle. And if we look to the past and we look at past cycles, we can see future cycles very clearly. You take a little kid, you put him in front of a graph of the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ or whatever, you say, look, it went up, and then it went down, and then it went up, and then it went down, and then it went up. What do you think is going to happen next? What does the kid say? Well, it's going to go down. And you can put all the empty suits you want on MSNBC and all that other crap, right? Or that's gone now. What Fox Money and MS Money or whatever the hell it is, right? Like, you put all those guys on there, everybody from Jim Cramer to people that actually know what they're talking about, and none of them are as smart as that little kid. Well, this time is different. You know what happens right after someone says this time is different? Immediately, circumstances show you that they're wrong. It's right up there with that can't happen here. Usually when somebody says it can't happen here, it's about to happen here. And so what we can look at is every major innovation. And sometimes it was technological, and sometimes it was other things that were disruptive. Every time there's a major disruptive to flow, there's a cycle of boom, glut, bust. And bust doesn't mean everybody goes away. If we look back, let's look at the dawn of internet, like modern consumer internet. We had, you've got mail, right? Remember that, right? You got a free disk. You went home and you stuck it in your computer and you plugged your phone in a modem in the back of it. You didn't even know what a modem was unless you were a geek like me. And you ran the disk and it dialed the local number and you got a modem handshake and you've got mail. And it was a welcome email from AOL saying you have an email account now. Like, wow, I have an email account. All right. And then all of a sudden, everything exploded. Since people got online, then people put things online for those people to see. We had chat boards everywhere. We had message boards, real ones, like not the ones I had in the 80s where you had to dial it in one place. It was just stream of consciousness, but like organized old school bulletin boards that nobody hardly uses anymore. Those blew up. We had all kinds of list servers like Yahoo email lists that I was on several of, and that was for sharing information about everything from technology to guns. And we had all these social media platforms that exploded, all these social media widgets. But let's just talk about just search. So here's some companies that did things like run Super Bowl commercials in the early 2000s. Lycos, Ask Jeeves. Both of those ran commercials during a Super Bowl were at the time, a 30-second commercial was $1 million to run one time. Do you even know who the, if you're old like me, you go, oh, yeah, I remember those, right? Huh? And there's some other ones like Hotbot and all, they didn't do Super Bowl, Hotbot and all the Vista and Dogpile and, right, Yahoo Directory, right? Like, we had all these search engines. And then it was just like, and everybody was vying to be the next, but nobody became the next Google. Google ruled all. Some people used Yahoo still, and those were mostly people that got on Yahoo email and never left. And since they go to Yahoo, they use Yahoo. And then, you know, boomers and other technophobes who cannot change their default settings used, you know, Microsoft Edge, whatever the hell it was, Bing, all the Microsoft name changes that were the same crap that were just built default into the browser. But then in the end, it was Google. Or if you look at online shopping, there were 1,000 sites that were going to be the big site, but Amazon ruled all. And so you always get this kind of like boom, like money gets thrown. Like all these companies, all these search engines, Seven Search, whatever, all these shopping sites, all these like Finder sites, right? All of this technological boom that happened around the internet and Web 2.0, remember that? It was all because the boom was caused by money. People started throwing money at it. Institutions, individuals, et cetera. Everybody threw money, and everybody wanted to be sure they were in the game because they knew somebody was going to win, and they wanted to capture the winner. And in some cycles, you end up with 3 or 4 big players that come out the other side, some only 1 or 2. And we're probably in a place where we're going to come out with like 3 or 4 big players. You know, I think X will be okay because they have so much integration. So Grok, Meta, I don't know, man. Meta is part of Facebook, and Facebook, like when I talk to my grandkids, did you see that on Facebook? My grandpa, we don't use Facebook, right? So like Facebook is an aging population of boomers and older Gen Xers. For sharing pictures, and they're not hip to this whole Meta AI thing very much. And Survivalizer saying Meta AI is dog shit. So I don't know that even with the social media captivity that Meta really makes it long term. Being big alone doesn't do that. Does anybody remember when Google decided they were going to take over from Facebook? It was like Google Spaces or Communities or something. They tried like 2 or 3 versions of it. It just never circles or circle jerks. So like that, if Google couldn't do a thing, that means that clearly not everybody can do everything. It was because they're big. ChatGPT has a huge installed base, and they are doing the best job of having all the things and continuously, like, we're going to get a new thing and we're going to make it really good, and then we're going to add another thing. Gemini is going to make it because Google does have the power of the cloud, the technology, and the money. And it is very good compared to some alternatives. Claude has a huge dedicated base, and it does certain things really well. And those are probably your big players, like Grok, Claude, Gemini, and ChatGPT. And each will have different strengths, weaknesses, and fan bases. But there's dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of other companies. And there's tons of companies that want to use those technologies and build on them. And what they're building is what's really driving this. And this is what people understand. They are people that want to put AI into the corporate space, and they are in the implementation business, and they are developing products and services so that if the company just says, we want to use Microsoft, and Microsoft will probably be around too, right? We want to use them as our engine and drive with, but like Copilot sucks, right? But like, we want to do this customized thing, and we want to use the Microsoft. Then that integration company wants to have the computing power to work with that and create a siloed system internally where data flows into the company, but not back out to the general population. Because if you're a corporate player and your best execs are figuring out how to go to market, even if that doesn't give direct information to your competition, the methodology becomes part of the AI infrastructure, and your competitors gain access to your talent, like your talent's output, not their direct output, but their concepts. Like, you have no idea how these big companies protect that kind of IP. I've been in a data centers, for instance, for pharmaceutical companies – I swear to God, I went into a data center from the FBI once. And the data center at the FBI had really, really tight security. The data center for Johnson & Johnson? It made it look like the FBI and the NSA and the CIA were in one place. And they all had their own security layers there, right? So protecting that security. So you have all this boom. And so everybody wants to build infrastructure, 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 infrastructure. But there is no need for the volume. And no, they're not going to use it all to figure out what freaking your favorite lipstick is so they can surveil you and spot you because they know you like red number 7 or whatever. I'm not saying surveillance won't use it. I'm not saying surveillance is not a problem. I'm saying it's not what you're saying it is, and it's not what all this is for. And there will be the common cycle. Boom, you're in it right now. Boom, always, 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 infinity leads to glut. Glut, always, 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 infinity leads to bust. That doesn't mean everybody goes away. It means we'll move on to something else as the next super cycle. And everybody will say they already knew it was going to be that way, and everybody will pretend it didn't happen, just like they always do, because that cycle repeats too. So as you're thinking about investing in things and what have you going forward, you're looking for the little under the, you know, the one that's under the wire that nobody knows about, the super secret one that the really expensive email list told you about. Keep that in mind, because those plays are usually short term only. Because when everybody FOMOs in, that's the time you want to be effing out. All right? Just, I'll leave it at that. All right, moving on. I'll talk about the Iran deal for just a minute, because I see a lot of people I generally agree with saying some really stupid shit right now.
This is even worse than what Biden and Obama did.
It's no, it's not. When Biden and Obama did what they did, they just gave Iran money and took their word for things. And Iran got to keep its navy and all of its military capabilities. Iran's military capabilities have been decimated upon decimated upon decimated.
They can still send drones and rockets.
I know that. I didn't say they have no military capability. I said that their capability has been drastically set back, like 15 years backwards or more, really, because they do not even have a navy. They have freaking bass boats with machine guns now, basically. Yeah, a little bit better. They got center consoles, like Blue Water center consoles with machine guns. And you can do a lot with that, but you can get your ass smoked with it pretty quick, too. They have their shitty drones, and they do not have the ability to project force that they had before this. That doesn't mean we should have done it. I'm just saying what is. Okay? And you really need to understand, like, this is not my opinion now. This is, like, my opinion was we should have not – like, if anybody that's listened for a long time has no difficulty understanding this. We should not be touching the Middle East at all. We should take every single bit of what we have over there and bring it home now and worry about our own effing country. And we'll say, but these guys are over there doing – and you don't care about that. The TV made you care. Okay? You've been convinced to be afraid of things you do not need to be afraid of, and I think we shouldn't touch it. Now that I said that, now maybe you'll listen to what I'm saying about what it is, because it isn't what I want, but it is what it is. And some of it's not awful. We're going to give Iran $300 billion. No, the United States is going to give Iran no money. All the money on the table for Iran to acquire is behavior dependent. In other words, you do this thing, you get this much to rebuild this thing, and somebody comes in and helps you rebuild it to make sure that's what you're doing with the money. Doesn't mean I trust anybody, but that's the deal as outlined, because we don't have a deal yet. This is a memorandum of understanding, okay? But it's countries like Oman, Saudi Arabia, UAE, and Qatar that are spending the money, not the United States. So when someone, like, you know, I generally like, but like, you know, Dan McAdams over with Dr. Paul says that money could have been used to make America great again. No, it couldn't. No, it couldn't. Because it's not our money. You see how that works? We're not going to give them any money. And I don't think as long as Orange Man is president, they're going to get any money from us. Now, the next person might give them money, but Trump's not going to give them money. You get carry water for Trump. No, I really don't like Donald Trump. But I will not lie about Donald Trump to make my case to why not to like him. It's called common sense of being a fucking grown-up, okay? Yeah. So that's where that lies. The Strait is open. It was open before. Yes, it was, but it's open again. One thing does not cancel the other thing out, right? Because in the meantime, Iran's ability to protect military force went to dog shit. They have a lot to fix before they have any time to do anything else. Okay? The biggest problem right now is actually Israel and what they're doing effing around up in Lebanon. Right? Well, Iran's got proxies up there. Yes. And when they do anything, then you light them up. But they're lighting them up because they're still just there because they exist. And it's derailing the process because Israel does not want this process to go through, which should be a reason that you probably do want it to go through. Israel's doing everything it can to derail this. That tells you something in of itself. And so where do I think this all fleshes out? I think that most likely Iran will be a problem again, but it won't be a problem again for a while. But Israel will tell you they're 5 seconds away from having a nuclear bomb within 2 months. I promise you that will happen. And you do with that as you want. And all I'm saying isn't rah, rah, Trump did good, or boo-hoo, Trump did bad, right? All I'm saying is this is kind of where we're at. We really don't know, but most of what the TV says and what most of social media is saying about what has been agreed to is not even close to accurate, which is par for the course and the cycle cycling once again. On that, I mentioned with the boom, glut, bust thing with AI, be careful how you invest, where you invest, and when you invest, and the timing of your investment. So about, I think, 2 weeks before the SpaceX IPO, right after I got back from Estes Park, or maybe it was right before I left, I don't remember which one, a lot's gone on in the past month. But somebody wrote in and asked John Pugliano about the IPO coming for SpaceX. And John's basic advice was, yeah, don't. Not that there's anything wrong with SpaceX as a company. Not that it won't be a good investment. Just IPOs are generally a bad idea. This is how IPOs work, in case nobody ever told you. So institutional investors get in pre-IPO. They buy a shitload of stock before the IPO, and some of them are able to buy more right at the strike price of the IPO before it really becomes public. And then they watch morons chase the price up all day long during the IPO. And toward the end of the bell, they start dumping for instant realized gains. They reserve some of those for day two when the euphoria continues, where they dump more. As the thing recedes, they take a portion of their gains, they buy in, and basically you think of it like playing with the house's money. So think about the idea that you go to a casino and you're a really good blackjack player. And so you play blackjack, and this is before the days of multiple decks and all, you're a good card counter, and you make a bunch of money. And then when you look at the money, you say, okay, I won $10,000. And you take $2,000 and you put it in your play budget, and you take $8,000 and you cash it in, and you go back to your hotel and you lock it in your hotel safe so you can't get to it. And then you take that $2,000, you walk over to the roulette wheel, and you put it on black. If you win, you win. And if you lose, you still won. That's what the institutional investors do with IPOs. The IPO cycle historically is very, very, very predictable. Okay. For the first 1, 2, 3 months, you get euphoria and fade. It's going to do everything. It slices, it dices, it launches satellites to Neptune, and they come back with Pluto inserted in their ass, and they clean your house, right? Like, it's just ridiculous the things that it's going to do. And so everybody FOMOs in. And the price is very volatile, but it has a lot of spikes, and one day it's just going to take off. For about 3 to 6 months, the euphoria really fades, and everything levels off, and you generally have a retreat by month 6 to 7. This is a very traditional number I'm giving you, 46 to 56% off the IPO high. Actually, 46 to 56% off the IPO strike price. Amazon did it exactly in that range. Meta did it. Well, it was Facebook at the time, right? Google did it. Okay. Like Amazon did it. Like this is just normal. This is just what happens with winners. Winners have this cycle. Okay. Then from 6 months out to about 1 year, that's where the smart money goes in and sees the accumulation trough you hear me talk about with investments. And then toward the end of that year as operations begin to kick in, forward-looking statements from the company, contracts are won, people start to actually look at the value of the company instead of the price of the company. In the words of Warren Buffett, price is what you pay and value is what you get. The value investors come later in the cycle, and they start driving the long-term future of the stock price. And you know, people start looking at things like price to earnings ratios and things like that and go, hey, this is actually – because SpaceX is going to be a very profitable company. There is no one that can put poundage into space for a better return of the investment of the person paying for the poundage to go to space than SpaceX. It's not even close. There is nothing. Okay, fine, whatever. They get a government contract. I'm saying if you want a satellite to go up into space and stay there, and you are a company and you are doing it for money, not because, you know, you get your jollies off spending taxpayer money. The most cost-effective way to get that piece of machinery into space is SpaceX. Musk is building on the Ford model, the Henry Ford Senior model. When Henry Ford was like, we don't have good enough transportation between these two plants from the railroad system, because the railroad is a monopoly, he bought a small railroad and built it himself and used it for himself, and then he sold cargo transit to others on it. Elon Musk needs his SpaceX, his satellites in space for Starlink, so he built a rocket paid for by the government because they need rockets too to put his own shit in space, and then sells that cargo capacity in excess to third parties. There, and the future is in orbit. I'm sorry if you don't like it. It is. It won't be AI data centers in space. That's dumb. That was another IQ test Elon threw out there, like Doge the coin, not Doge the thing. And many of you failed it. It's not doable. It just isn't. It's dumb. It doesn't make any sense. But the future is in orbit. And SpaceX is the way to get there. And if you bought the IPO and you wait long enough, everything will be fine. But you overpaid for your initial investment. I'm sorry. Right now, you're up about 10 bucks a share. If you got the average buy price of 154 on the IPO, but many people on that day paid even more, and many people paid much more in the following days, and we told you not to, because we're smart enough to not be emotional and understand the cycle always cycles. All right. Next up, Tulsi Gabbard, right? So Tulsi came out about a month ago and said, I'm leaving in June. My husband has this rare form of cancer. Being the director of national intelligence, this is a big workload. My husband needs me. I'm going to go be with my husband and help him through this so I'm not divided. And I think there's some real truth in that. I think that he really is sick, but I think it was also a good way out the door, and I don't think she wanted to be there anymore. And I think the reason that Tulsi didn't want to be there anymore, Tulsi actually believes in what she does. She's a unicorn, right? Now, there's a lot of things I agree with Tulsi Gabbard on and a lot of things I disagree with her on, but when it comes to morality, we may disagree on opinion on certain things, but I believe she's an inherently moral human, and that she really believed. I would say the next guy he probably won't leave because he's smart enough to know he can still do more there than somewhere else. But RFK, I think, is in the same boat. There's a lot of shit. Like, I don't want RFK touching money at all. Okay. And while I'm all for RFK being behind environmental decisions, that is only outside of the word carbon. If we're talking about actual toxins and actual pollution, he's great. When you let a person that believes in climate change near the economy, it's back to money. They destroy everything. So as long as you keep him in his lane, he's fantastic. And I think both of them thought, I'll be able to get some shit done. And I think they both found out you're really going to play a bunch of political games, and you're not really going to get anything done, and you don't really have any power because the deep state has all the power, and you're a figurehead. And yes, because you're a figurehead, They have to give you some authority over some of the levers, but you're still inherently limited. But one thing that the NI can do is declassify things. And it, this is not just the last dump. The combination of dumps of files that, that Tulsi Gabbard let out, if you already knew, they tell you nothing. I don't say that to put it down. It's just they don't. Like, there's nothing that came out that we didn't know. Like, one of the things that came out, do you know all the biolabs that Russia said was in Ukraine? Yeah, they were there. And they're also in other places. And they are ours, and we did it, and we knew it when we said we didn't, and Fauci knew it when he said it wasn't there. But also, like, the Wuhan connection to Fauci, the censorship, the cover-ups, the manipulation of data, the silencing of critics, all of it. And I don't mean publicly silencing critics. I mean internally, like, if you were running anything inside NIH or you were being paid with grants from NIH, if you said the wrong words, Anthony Fauci could destroy you with a flip of a switch, with a snap of the fingers, no grant money for you, and he would put out the word and destroy you. And this has all been known. What we have now is conclusive proof, and not just conclusive proof of malfeasance, but conclusive proof of multiple felonies, and I would say felonies that definitely carry into the realm of full-on treason against this country. And we know that, and most of us who have eyes to see and ears to hear already knew that. Am I glad she did it? Yes. Does it matter? No. There isn't one person who, if you would have asked them in, let's say, January about the situation, would have defended Fauci and would have defended the status quo and would have defended everything that was done, the masking, the silencing of doctors, the internal use of the hammer to destroy careers and grant money, all of it. Like, they would have defended it then. Now that we know it's all true, everything we said, they'll still defend it. In fact, the left is infuriated with Tulsi Gabbard. They're very, very angry. They should be angry about the fact that they were locked in their homes for no good reason. They should be infuriated that we literally funded what caused this. They should be infuriated that it continued to go on. They should be infuriated that they made up medical and scientific fact out of their asses, that it was enforced with authoritarianism, and that the man knew what he was doing the entire time and he committed treason. But they're not mad about that. They're mad that she said it, and they're even more mad that she proved it, and her proving that he's a traitor, well, actually, it makes her a traitor. And this can be summed up, and I hate using this term because it's been ruined now, because it's become a catch-all to defend the right, is TDS, Trump Derangement Syndrome. And if you want to know if Trump Derangement Syndrome is real, all you need to do is look for a transgendered clown protesting the killing of Algie at the Lincoln Reflecting Pool. And right there, like, you should just be like, there is no limit to stupidity. The peak of Mount Stupid is always gaining altitude. We'll never find the peak. It's there. And everything has been destroyed as to discourse. And I want you to understand that was by design. And what I mean by that is you can no longer have a legitimate intellectual conversation in the public sphere in this country. There is no intellectual honesty. There is no willingness to have legitimate debate anymore. Not that there was much of it, but there was some. And COVID killed it. COVID killed that. When it became acceptable that you would have a medical claim that can be proven or disproven through legitimate trial, and you had a doctor on one side saying no, and you had a doctor on the other side saying yes, and it was impossible for those two doctors to have anything approaching a scientific intellectual debate in public, it told you it was over. And if you don't think that's by design, then I don't know how to help you. Of course it's by design. That's, you want to know why? That's another reason I wrote these books. Everything that happens in your life is by design. The only question is, who is the designer? Now, I know some of you have religious beliefs and God is the designer. Okay, God is the designer in your religion of you and you internally and your reflection and your relationship with your God, I respect that. But God doesn't put his finger on the scale here of things like Anthony Fauci. Because if he did, I think Anthony Fauci would be in a, you know, 6x12 room in an orange jumpsuit right now. Because that would be something approaching justice. And his crimes go way back before COVID. The things that that dude did during the AIDS epidemic were treasonous at the time and murderous at the time. And you know who said as much on the floor of the House in the 1980s? Really, you can look this up if you want to. It's hard to find, but you can find it if you want to. No less than Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi took Fauci to task over some of the things he did with drugs and medications during the AIDS epidemic of the 1980s that were so exactly matched to what he later did with COVID. It's impossible not to see the pattern, but all of a sudden she's a fan. I don't know, making, you know, billions of dollars on stock trades through insider trading will make you protect the system that does that for you, I guess. But you can't have it legitimate. They've ruined it. So if you say anything that sounds remotely pro-Trump, you're a MAGA-tard, right? You're just a treasonous. You're an insurrectionist, right? You know, and if you say anything in opposition, you have TDS, which is a thing, but now it's not a thing anymore because it's been ruined because it's a catch-all. And if you ask a question about Epstein, you have TDS. You see how this works? It is scientifically designed to prevent discussion and make you stay inside their design. And the only way out is to see it for what it is, accept that which you cannot change, have the wisdom to know what you can change, like the alcoholic's prayer, right? And then the wherewithal to build your own systems for yourself so that you can flourish no matter what they do. That is the only option that you have. You will not fix these things. I'm sorry. I wish I had better news for you. Case in point, the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom is just every stupid thing we've done here in the United States times 1,000. And literally, I think times 1,000. I remember covering for you guys a long time ago. I was still working at JOB. So we're talking 2009 or earlier. I covered a story where a guy in the UK comes home. There is a man who happened to be an Islamic immigrant, but it could have been anybody, doesn't matter to me, actively raping his daughter on his living room floor. Unfortunately for the rapist, this man was a cricket player in his youth, and he liked cricket, and he had cricket bats on the wall. I don't know if you've ever seen a cricket bat, but you don't want to get your ass beat with one. That's what happened. So he gets the cricket bat off the wall and beats the shit out of this guy, and has him kind of curled up on the floor sobbing, which is, if it was me, I'm just going to say no phone calls would have had to been made, and nobody would have saw anything, because I already know what I'm dealing with in the UK. But he tries to do the right thing, so he calls whatever the UK equivalent to 911 is, 811 or whatever the hell it is over there, and he calls the police, and he says, you know, the guy was here raping my daughter. I beat his ass with a cricket bat. Come get him. I've got him here. So the police come, and they arrest the rapist. And they arrest dad. Yeah, this is 2009-ish, right? They arrest dad. They both get prosecuted for crimes. One for rape, because he wasn't attempting rape. He was in the act of raping this woman, this young woman. So he gets charged with rape. The other man gets charged with assault with a deadly weapon. This man is in his home raping his daughter. He hits him in the face, in the back, in the body with a cricket bat. He gets arrested for assault with a deadly weapon. He got sentenced to more time in jail than the rapist. That's 2009. And everything's gotten worse. So, as you might imagine, the people of the UK are very displeased with their society today. They are very unhappy. They have an economy that makes the United States economy today, comparatively, it looks like the United States economy during like the 1950s and 60s. I mean, we are in boom city compared to the UK. UK is in dog shit mode. You think we have immigration problems in this country? Their country is being run by third world immigrants. And I'm sorry if you don't like that terminology. there is a third world. There are people that live there. And when those people come to the first world from that place and bring their problems with them and they do not assimilate and they do not adjust, then you have immigrating the third world, whether you like the term or the connotation or not. That's what's going on. And so they, and like, if you are in the streets right now and something goes on and you have a conflict with one of these people, the police always side with them. They're not doing jack shit to fix this problem. And the truth is the will of the people, the majority of the people anyway, has been broken. And one of the things was the destruction of nationalism, even with Brexit. You know, when Brexit was going on, you had young Brits saying, I am not British, I'm European. I mean, I remember long, long, long ago, I had a little personal website. I won't even say what it's about. Doesn't matter. This is way before. This is like when I was learning how to make a website. We're talking like 96, 97. So I had this website. And one of the things you could do back then that was kind of cool is put a thing called a guest book. Nobody does this anyway. A guest book on your website. And it's just like a guest book at a, like an Airbnb. You could, I was here and I'm from so-and-so and I like this site because, right? So I put this guest book on it. And, you know, we're doing all the little like spinning GIFs and shit back then and Java that makes reflections and like just learning new things, right? A lot of it that would become archaic really fast. And I got this thing that was the Texas, the shape of the state of Texas, because I'm from Texas, with the Texas flag on it. And it said, sign our guest book at the bottom. I had several different people from European countries that took exception with the fact that, but you're flying the state flag. You're identifying as this thing. So when you see people today that are offended by the American flag, this is just a logical extension. And this is what's going on. And this guy, what's his name? Andy Burnham is probably the next prime minister of the UK. He's left of stammer. He's a socialist. He's a business-friendly socialist. Like he said, what the hell is that? All that means is I take businesses' money and I make sure that businesses get state contracts when they give me money. That's what business-friendly socialist means. He's basically a Bernie Sanders, but he's going to be tougher on immigration. So he says, but, you know, Trump was going to release the Epstein files, right? Trump was going to release all the JFK files, right? Trump was going to end the war in Ukraine, right? Trump wasn't going to create any new wars, right? And hate Trump all you want. And those are all bullshit stories, are they not now? Can we not say that? That said, Trump has done more of what he said he would do than probably any U.S. politician in my lifetime. I can't believe you said it. I said it because it's true. Who did more of what they said they would do than Trump? Especially things that nobody thought he would do, like, you know, freeing Ross, things like that. Right. At least the attempt at Doge, which failed miserably, but at least the attempt at it, putting a guy like Robert F. Kennedy in charge of HHS, putting a person like Tulsi Gabbard in as the DNI. Right. Like there's a lot of things. In other words, I'm saying there's tons to criticize, but you can also say like in some ways he's done more of what he claimed he would do than most. And he still failed miserably. So what do you expect from a British socialist left of the guy that destroyed the country? I think you're going to get more of the same. I think the UK may be past the point of rescue, to quote an old Hal Ketchum song, right? I think we're past the point of rescue. And I will say I have not been paying attention to the comments at all. So if you have any questions or comments for me, I have like one starred right now. And you should totally drop your question. If you have a question or a comment for me to comment on, because we're getting toward the end right here. Business-friendly socialist equals more taxes. Yeah, probably. Now, the last thing I want to talk about, though, is I want to just sing the praises of my country for a minute, if you don't mind. And not America. Hell yeah. We'll just kick ass anywhere we go. I'm talking about my actual country, the place I live. And I don't mean Texas. I mean the United States. I'm talking about how much we really have going for us here. And it actually makes the sentiment of like the late teen, early 20 Gen Zs right now more disgusting than it is. I'm not saying all of you guys, because I know I have some people that are in that age range. You listen, and I appreciate you. And I talk in, when I say majority, 51% is a majority, okay? And I don't even know if it's a majority, but a huge portion of 18 to 24-year-olds right now literally hate the country that they're from, that they live in, and they're blessed by. And people say, well, that's always been the case. Every generation blames the one before, you know. We learned that in the 1980s song and all. And I agree, teach children well in the 60s, right? Like, it's a recurring theme, but not like this. If you go back to, like, the boomers when they were the 20-somethings and teens in the 70s, and they hated Nixon and they hated the Vietnam War and all, they didn't hate America. They didn't want to not be Americans. They wanted to stop America from doing certain things. And in many instances, they were correct, by the way. Okay, and if you look at like the minimal activism of Gen X, like it was kind of the same thing but different. Like the enemy of Gen X was things like the activist Gen X's was like the World Bank and things you could be like, yeah, I see why you hate those people. Like I get it. Even the millennials, they weren't going to get anywhere with it, but like the millennials were what fueled things like Occupy Wall Street, with the idea that corporate America was running America, and that was wrong. Okay. It wasn't, we hate being America. We should be embarrassed to be Americans. Everything that we live on, every place we step is stolen land. Now, a lot of the people from those cohorts all the way into the boomers now have shifted into the left-wing lunacy of America hatred. But it is this generation, the people that are in college right now, that have been fully indoctrinated to hate the very thing that made them blessed in the first place. But even you retards, you can't ruin it. I'm sorry. You can't destroy it. We have, you know, I have railed against the term American exceptionalism because of the way that it's used, not because it's not a thing. America does have many things about it that are exceptional. And one is we are a true republic from a standpoint of the states. Now, a lot of that with the incorporation of the Bill of Rights and many of the horrible things that happened over the last 50 years has been eroded, and the difference between the member states has been reduced, but it's still there. COVID proved that. My life in Texas was better than your life in New York. I had a long-running argument with Sal the Agorist, who was living in Jersey but really lived in New York. Like, a lot of people don't know, like a lot of people that live in Jersey on the other side of the river, they're just on the other side of the river for money, but their life is in New York City. And so New Jersey and New York were very totalitarian both. And he kept telling me, no, you got to stay and fight. You got to do this. I'm not leaving New York City, blah, blah, blah. And like 3 weeks later, his ass ran to Florida because there's a difference there. And that's a big piece of it. Another part of it is just our diversity. There is strength in diversity, not when there's diversity for diversity's sake, when there's diversity of thought, when there's diversity of approach, when there's more than one way to do things and everybody is free to experiment and find the things that really work best, when everybody can start a business, when you have that, you have something exceptional. That is what this country is. And that's why we have exceptional components of our nation in just about every conceivable way. Our food is just one example. You know, the white people don't even have food culture. The most sophisticated cooking schools in the world teach French cuisine. Stop your stupidity. White people didn't even know how to use spices and herbs until shut up. You're parroting some shit some TikTok retard said. It's not real. It's not true. And you know where I'm going with this? The World Cup. The World Cup. I have seen so many little videos and stories here and there in the past few weeks of people from Germany, Italy, and the UK, etc., mostly Europeans, who came to America because soccer or football, right, is the number one sport in the world. In America, we think football, right? We think football, baseball, basketball, right? Actually, we think football, basketball, baseball, kind of in that order, and then NHL, and then everything else, right? And we don't have the best team. You know, we're doing better, I think, this year than anybody expected. But America, as a soccer nation, we're only going to be so good because our best athletes play football and basketball because they make a lot more money doing that. If you are a great athlete in the UK, you're either a football or a rugby player. And you make, like, NFL money, right? So they're going to be better than us. And so that's what they get jazzed up about. And in the UK in particular – like, teams are neighborhood-centric, and these kids play through football clubs all the way up. They progress, and they play together from the time they're in, like, kindergarten until they graduate what we call high school. And even into university, they play together if they don't leave in these local clubs. It is incredibly popular, and this is true in France. It's true, like, not to the level UK, but France, Italy, Germany, et cetera. It's a huge, huge thing. So out of all those millions and millions of people, with Europe having a population roughly equal to the United States, a lot of them came here. And a lot of them spent the last 20 years, and especially the COVID years, hearing about how horrible America was. I heard people say things like, I really thought it was like a 1 in 4 chance that I would get shot while I was here, but I came anyway. I don't know why. Things like that. Or people that got hurt and had to go to the hospital and thought they were going to be thrown out in the streets or whatever. Like, no, I got a bill, but I got care. You know, and I got care faster than I would have at home, right? Like, and the food and the restaurants and how nice people are and how many things there are to do and how beautiful the country is, right? Like, I have just seen, like, this outpouring of, okay, I was wrong. I'm sorry. Your country is amazing. But what does that tell you? That tells you that their media lied its ass off, and don't think they didn't know they were a lion ass. What did Biden call it? lion dog face pony soldier, right? Like, don't think they didn't know they were lying dog face pony soldiers, right? Like, they knew what they were. Why, if you are the media, if you're the BBC, right, or whatever, the French media or the German media or the Dutch media, right, and everybody I know that lives in Europe that I talk to, I have family over there, like, they, oh, it's so bad. How do you live? Like, no, it's not. No, it's not. Well, I don't want to come. I mean, I could get hurt. Like, I've lived here my whole life. I'm in my mid-50s. I'm fine. It'll be okay. Why would you lie about that? Well, maybe you don't want your people asking questions like, why does it suck so bad here? If socialism's so great, why is it so much better where they don't have it yet? And why are stupid people over there trying to force it and make it like here when here sucks? That's why. I want to say something to anybody that's over the years has heard me many times criticize my own country. I want to make sure you understand something. I am not criticizing my country. I'm criticizing policies of my government and elements of my country. My country overall, I love. When I was 17 years old, it's a pretty young age to be, I put my hand up and I swore an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. I was much more of an idealist back then. I believed more of the concept of America must be good at all times back then than I do now. I'm more of a realist today, but I'm still that person. When I look at this country, when I look at what I've built in this country, when I look at what people I know have built in this country, and when I look at how much more difficult that would be in other countries, and countries that we think of as free countries. Remember, my greatest mentor in business was Neil Franklin. Neil Franklin, who won the Branson Award, as in Richard Branson, twice. The only man in the world who ever did that. Ever. And he built his business in the 80s and early 90s in the UK. And the reason I worked with him is in the early 2000s, he moved his business to the United States because it became impossible for him to run his business in the UK, a business that was recognized by Sir Richard Branson as being exceptional. It became impossible for him to run his business profitably in London anymore, so he moved it to Frisco, Texas. And that's where we met, and that's where we started working together. So there's not a lot of people moving their businesses to the United Kingdom, to France, to Germany, or to any other effing place in Europe because it's too difficult to run their business in the United States. Now, there are people moving their business from California or Michigan or, you know, Maryland or New Jersey or New York, but that is what makes us exceptional. That legitimately is one of the things that makes us exceptional, that I don't have to leave my country to change my regulatory status. And I'm going to say something that's going to make a lot of you guys have a hard time accepting it. That is a fundamental hallmark of actual anarchism. That's what actual anarchism looks like. Actual anarchism is not freedom from all rules and regulations, because people make decisions about how they manage their property that they own or their area that they control. And it is the ability to choose jurisdiction that makes real anarchy real anarchy. There's no such thing as no rules. No society has ever worked without rules. However, the higher the trust of the society, the less rules are necessary. And this is why I know some of you don't like hearing this, because you want open borders and, you know, you're purist anarchists with no common sense balancing to the scales. This is why you cannot import the third world willy-nilly, because you destroy high trust society. You absolutely destroy it. And you can have high trust society that leans left, center, or right. But what you have to have is respect for others and respect for local systems and conventions. Like, I would say that southern Vermont is a pretty left-leaning place. It's also, if you stay out of Burlington, it's extremely high trust. Many, many years ago, I went and spoke at Ben Falk's, one of his PDCs, as a co-instructor. And there was a little gas station, a little, you know, convenience store gas station just down, like a quarter mile down the road from his place. And I stopped there on the way in. I buy a rental car. There's like a, you know, typical like little small town, couple old men hanging out and talking outside of the store, you know, drinking a coffee or something, and just shooting the breeze. And out of instinct, I get out of the car and to go in the store, and I hit the key fob, and the car goes beep when the door's locked. And all of those guys looked at me like, not from around here now, are you? Because the idea that they would need to lock that car was so foreign to them, because it was a high trust society. And we have lost that high trust society, not only because of, but largely because of importing the third world. And that's not that true here in America, but it's very true in Europe. It's extremely true in Europe. And the higher the trust society that brings in low trust immigration, the more damage it does. Not just because it replaces the high trust, but the high trust lags in being rescinded before the low trust element takes advantage of it. And that's what's happened in the UK. And it's something we need to be very aware of in this country, because every single institution inside bureaucracy, inside all the political think tanks, inside all of education is geared toward turning us into that mess that they have over in Europe right now. That's what they want. Why do they want it? Well, the people that are really in charge want it for a system of control. A divided society is easy to control. The people that are the useful idiots, I really don't know how they've become so foolish as to want something that bad, but they have. With that, let me go ahead and take some questions real quick. I think I got three. If you have anything and you don't hear your name here in a second you want me to talk about, you need to do it now. Six runner guy. I'm your Huckleberry 76 and Bump Tool. I will be answering your questions. Anybody else, last call for questions or comments. Starting out from Six Runner Guy, how do you keep your ducks from flying off your property? I bought muskellies and they all flew away. All right, so this is easy. All you got to do with your muskellies is clip their wings so the girls can't fly and the guys won't leave. Muskellies can fly, And Muscovies can fly. When I had Muscovies here, one of the problems was they started landing on the pergola over the pool and pooping in the pool. So we cut their wings and that went away. And drakes are a lot harder to deal with. And I realized real quick, all I had to do was as they came out of the molt, because their feathers grow back, clip one wing on the girls, and the girls wouldn't fly, and then the boys would stay with the girls. So it was that simple. The ducks that I keep, though, are all mallard derivative domestic ducks. Everything that we keep in a barn yard, in a homestead, in a farmstead, other than Muscovies, comes from mallards, and all the changes are the color, shape, and size. So a Cayuga, a runner duck, a Welsh Harlequin, and a Rowan, all come, and a khaki camel, all come from mallards. They're all just different sizes, colors, and shapes. Okay? And they're all tend to be larger than the wild mallard ancestor. And because of that, they don't fly really well. Runners can fly okay. Most of these ducks can barely fly over a food dish, so I don't do anything. The other thing is, you got Muscovies. Where'd you get them from? Did you get babies? Or did you get some ducks that somebody caught from a park pond or something? They were all, or did you get adults from another place? Because they don't see your place as home yet. So it's very natural that they'll leave. Nick Ferguson actually had two leave and months later come back. And so they might even come back. But, you know, either get young ducks, clip wings, or just don't do Muscovies and you won't have a problem. If you get mallards, and some of the feed stores and stuff sell actual mallards, you will wish you didn't. I'm just going to say that. They're too small. They don't lay as much. They lay smaller eggs. They make lots of babies. They fly wherever they want. They poop wherever they want, and you don't want them. And your local government may have some department of making you sad issues with you as well. I'm your Huckleberry. Comment, just because it's better here, that doesn't mean we can't do better. Never said otherwise. It always amazes me that if you say anything good about something, somebody has to say, but it's still actually bad. I spend enough that, bro, I'm done. I know, and I like you, and you're an all right guy, and you've been around a long time, and I'm not really putting you down. But I have said enough negative that we don't need that. I have criticized and put down so many things that it's okay once in a while to actually acknowledge what we do well. Okay? And you won't die because we did that. And it won't mean that those problems aren't still there. And it doesn't mean anybody forgot about them. It's going to be okay, bro. Vermontool says, I have release fatigue, Fauci, UAP, JFK, Epstein, CA, and Minnesota fraud, because ultimately nothing happens beyond the release. Correct. Now, I will actually say some people are actually going to prison from Minnesota and California. The problem is these are the lower rung, you know, subtards, right? The people that actually orchestrated it are never going to be held accountable. You know, all you got to do is look at our Congress. Look how many of these people go into office and they have a few hundred thousand to their name. And in 5 or 6 years, they're multimillionaires. Some of them are hundreds of millions of dollars in wealth. Thousands of stock trades, insider trading that they legalized for themselves, massive fraud schemes. None of them are ever going to be held to consequence. Yeah, I could bring up Ilhan Omar, and I think she deserves to be in prison, but I could line up 10 Republicans in jumpsuits behind her and send them right in with her. These problems are always going to be here because the people that are responsible to stop the problems are largely the ones benefiting from the problems. And so you have release fatigue. That's stage one, right? You're at stage three, right? Like, it's the five stages of grief. And so what you have with, right, is you have denial. No, Jack, you're wrong. The system works, and we just need to get the right people. Right? So you get denial. And then you get anger, right? You start to realize that people like me are right. But you get mad at the whole thing. It's not fair, but we still have to be able to do something. So that leads into, you know, bargaining. And usually people that are fatigued are still in the bargaining stage. Well, yeah, it is that bad. Okay, you were right. I've let go of some of my anger, but there has to be something that we can do to fix it. There has to, like, maybe we can, like, okay, we can't just keep electing the same people, but maybe we can primary them out. Or maybe we can get some laws through that will restrict the people, even if they're bad people. Or maybe, like, yeah, okay. And then eventually you get to acceptance, right? You get to a point where you realize this is the way things are, and then you can finally move forward. You can finally move forward. And once you accept that things are the way they are, it doesn't mean that – see, this is the thing. This is where people get mad at me. You accept it, so therefore you must be okay with it. No. No, I'm not okay with it. When I look at my radar screen and there's a giant swirling, you know, vortex on the radar on a direct track for my property, and it's probably like an F3 tornado that might destroy my house, I'm not okay with it. But I also know that I can't stop it, and I accept that it's there, and then I can go into an action plan to protect myself, my wife, my property, and my animals, right? And there's different options depending on what's going on as to what I can do. But I'm accepting of the situation, and therefore I can go in. It's, most of you live most of your life in reaction mode, right? That's what they want you. That is your sympathetic neural state, reactionary mode. They put out a thing, you get angry, you react a certain way. That way is very predictable. And you need to understand that that way is always binary. We'll put out the thing, it'll make this side angry, and it'll make this side defensive, and that is entirely predictable, and that is a full 50, that's almost a perfect 50-50 split of the country right now, by design. And the people like us, they don't care about us. They largely leave us alone because we just go on with our lives. And there's two types of people that go on with their lives. There's people that are just disinterested, and they have no idea what's really going on. And they are blissfully unaware, and they are blissfully ignorant. And then there's the informed people that accept. That's how you move into what's called a parasympathetic neural state. Instead of fight, flight, or freeze, you move from reaction, because all of those are reactions. Fight is a reaction. Flight is a reaction. Freeze is also a form of reaction. Response, if it's fight, it's proper engagement. If you are going to retreat, it's strategically logical pulling back from a situation. That's response versus reaction. And you can't get into this neural state until you reach the state of acceptance. It is the only way. It's the only way. So I challenge you to get there as quickly as you can. With that, I'm going to wrap up today. I appreciate everybody that tuned in. Again, thank you for being here with me and celebrating 18 years of the Survival Podcast. You know, officially that happened 3 days ago, but we were off for that, so we'll celebrate it today. Maybe we'll go out with the full version of that song just for fun. Right now, something but a picture of a duck. I'm probably going to make some kind of video or slideshow out of it eventually, but I think we'll do that just for fun. Before we do, let me remind you, you can help support this show a variety of ways. One is become a member of the MSB. If you've never done that or you let your account expire, please consider renewing today. Just go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and click on members or the Members Brigade banner and sign up. $50 a year, get discounts, use the discounts, right? When you use the discounts, it will pay for your membership. It's that simple. Some of the discounts will pay for your membership for a year, year and a half, 2 years, 3 years on one purchase. This is only $50 a month, or $50 a year. $50 a month would actually probably be profitable still for some people, but it's $50 a year to be a member of the MSB, and then you know that you're helping support the show, and maybe we can give you another 18 years. I don't know if I got another 18 years in me, but probably got at least 10, at least. Anyway, with that, the other way to support us, do your online shopping beginning at tspaz.com. That's really easy to remember. That's why I set it up, tspaz.com. Stands for TSP Amazon, because in the beginning, the only stuff there was from Amazon. Now there's some other vendors as well. But the Black Flag Fly Window Traps, We just we bought a bunch of them last year, more than we needed, and I vacuum sealed them because they actually have a something they're treated with that actually attracts the flies. A smell, because the first year I found these, we didn't vacuum seal the leftovers, and when we went to pull them out the next year, they were full of moths that went into them because of the smell. Somehow they got in the box and went inside the traps and killed themselves, and they were then useless. So I learned to seal them up. That's a little add-on for you there if you buy a big package of them. But this is the time of year flies become a problem, and what do flies do when they get in your house other than annoy you? They end up in the window. These things, basically, you tape them in a window, they go in the corner. They use no chemicals. Again, there's some scent that they like, but it's not even so much the scent. It's that fly will start going around the window, gets to the corner. Ooh, what's this? He goes inside. And once one goes in, they all go in. If you check out the video I did of these things, it's gross the amount of flies that they get rid of. But traps work when you're not. If you're in fly territory right now, we are here because of all the rain this year. We have more flies than typical. So we busted these things out, and the fly problem disappeared in a day. They are that effective. They work really well. They have one negative. They have this little thing on the back of them that you, it's like a two-side sticky tape, and you pull it off and stick it in the window. It's ass. It sucks. It either doesn't hold or they kind of warp and they come off the window instead of sitting flat on the window. Take two little pieces of Scotch tape, fold the edge over just a little bit to make a tab so it's easy to pull off, and tape it to your window. Tape right inside the entry hole, just that part before it gets sticky, right there so it's flat on your window and maybe one piece in the corner. You won't see it. It'll sit there. It'll do its job. We have some big windows in the front of the house. We put one in both bottom corners of two of our big windows. That was the end-all, be-all of the fly plague. So if you want to get rid of them, that's the way to do it. Out in the coop and all, I just use standard fly tapes. These are for indoors. Again, no chemicals. No poisons, no toxins. I'll tell you when they stop working. But enough of them go in there that there's so many in there that the new ones that go in are walking on the backs of the dead. That's when you need to replace them. And that happens pretty quick when you first deploy them. So just know that. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. Have a great day. Thanks for everybody who was here. And let's go out listening to the full version of our new theme song, or what I guess you would call it, and have a great day. And I'll be back tomorrow with a great interview. Jesse Markowitz will be joining me tomorrow. Yeah, yeah.
He traded the sales tie and the corporate grind for muddy boots and that Texas sunshine. Dorothy by side on a 3-acre spread, 9-mile farmstead where the good life gets fed. 18 years of pockets dropping truth every day, helping you lie better, tough times or not. That's what he'd say. Calls himself a redneck hippie duck farmer, y'all, with a jerk of a smile and a heart standing tall. Redneck hippie duck farmer, down on 9 Mile Way. Biochar in the garden like the bomb shelter. Up in Estes Park snow, he's up at 5 a.m. writing Laws of Life, don't you know? Book one, ditch the system, design it your own way, a mill, build the system, work it every day. The preparedness ain't crazy, it's just being grown, responsible adulting in the world we've been shown. Charlie showing us how to live it right. From the YouTube days to the TSP throne, 15 plus years of knowledge and he's still going strong. Here's to Jack and Dorothy and that Duck Farmer life, living better every day through the struggle and the strife. Redneck hippie Duck Farmer. Jack Spurko, y'all, set us free.